Everybody's
Tiger
here.
Everybody's here. First things first. Woo! I'm Jenna Wolf.
Let's go, Jenna.
Boom! I don't
Jenna got pants on today, people. No. Show the people the pants, Jenna. Come on. Let's go. Let's go. Absolutely. There you go. Get us there, Jenna. Do your thing, Jenna. Do it. Zip it. Zip it.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a good time here at 3 a.m., seemingly. That is Nick Wright. Mm-hmm. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. I'm Jenna Wolf. We've got a great show for you today. I'm wearing pants. Mm-hmm. The Patriots celebrated in the streets of Boston. The Sixers pulled off a big trade in the middle of the night.
These guys are also
wearing pants. Mm-hmm. So we will start with the Lakers.
Mr. Tickles got on pants.
They played like they was wearing pants last night, not gym shorts. My Lord.
They got mollywopped, as Nick likes to say, losing by 42 points to the Pacers last night. It was LeBron's worst loss in his 16-year career, and it now drops the Lakers to 27-27 on the season. Well, what about the trade? Well, let's talk about those trade rumors. Lakers are reportedly waiting on a counteroffer from the Pelicans for Anthony Davis as talks have seemingly gone cold. LeBron was asked if all the trade talk is now affecting the way the team is playing on the court.
Obviously, we have a lot of guys that's been in trade talks the last couple weeks that's never been in that position before. So you have to ask those guys and how they're dealing with it. You can't really ask me. I've never, been a part of that, but I've been a part of teammates, I know it has to be tough on a lot of our guys, especially our young guys. Right now they've just never been a part of it, and they're hearing it every single day. And I know that the worst thing that you can do right now is be on social media. And I know all young guys love social media. So, that definitely can't help.
No one knows more about social media than that guy.
Yeah.
All right, Nick, let's talk about it. Does last night's loss show you that maybe the trade rumors are starting to affect the Lakers, especially what you saw on the court?
Yeah. I mean, there's no other way. There's no other way to read into it. And LeBron's right. LeBron has no idea what this is like. LeBron's never been the subject of trade rumors. The only trade that ever we found out after the fact he was rumored in was the Lakers years ago offering Kobe for a very young LeBron after Shaq left the Lakers and the Cavs dismissed it. Since then, he's had no trade clause in his contracts. He doesn't know what it's like to be on the trading block. But I would ask the audience to remember 1 year ago this week, because it's very instructive. There were trade rumors swirling around the entire Cleveland Cavaliers team. And what did they do that week? On February 3rd of 2018, they lost to the Rockets at home by 32 points. LeBron had 11 points in that game. The very next game they played Orlando, a bad Magic team. They were up 16 at the half. They lost the second half by 34 points en route to getting blown out. Those guys that knew they might be traded, knew they could be on their way out, stopped committing defensively, as is understandable. You want me to sacrifice for who? For what? For a team that's going to be my ex-team? And the team was falling apart. The Cavs found out the day before the trade deadline, 1 year ago today, that the trades were happening. That's the game LeBron had the block on one end, the game winner on the other against the Timberwolves. The next day, they remade the Cavs, went on the run they went on. But this is not shocking that they played this poorly. What it did, though, was it made making some type of move, and I'm talking Svi Mykhailiuk for Reggie Bullock, which happened in the middle of the night, some major move, all the more of a necessity for the Lakers, because these guys, while they might play better once the trade deadline is passed, I think some of them might be lost emotionally for the season.
Yeah, it's impossible to think that this young group of players, it wouldn't affect them. Now, Lonzo Ball not being in the lineup and other injuries, yeah, they're shorthanded also, but the overall pressure. Just imagine just your family, just your close family. Forget about people just in the basketball world. All the communication you have to try to get them to not talk about it, because it's a reality. It's been a reality since LeBron has been there. He was only going to play with this group of young players for 1 year. It was a matter of, are they going to be able to keep one of them? Which one of them's going to develop? Who's going to be the better asset amongst the three of them? And I could throw Josh Hart in there after the great summer he had last year, because people like his overall ability. But when you just think about trying to do your job and be professional, it's hard when you don't know what your home's going to be. Now, How do you focus? How are you able to do that? Man, it was obviously last night they were not in the type of mentality that you want to have in the basketball.
They weren't in sync as a team.
No, absolutely not.
And LeBron, listen, this is part of the deal with LeBron. Is he's not exactly going to be the life coach for these guys during this process. And in fact, he might detach himself a bit during this process. We saw that in the fourth quarter when he was sitting on the end of the bench as he always did, and then all of a sudden those empty seats weren't filling up. Like, LeBron is not going to be the best guy to get guys through this because he doesn't view that as his job.
A lot of times at training camp, being in the NFL, there's a lot of guys that potentially I might be mentoring or building relationships through the offseason. When you start getting to that second week in August, you start realizing, I'm going to have to start pulling myself away. I'm going to have to start more gravitating to the guys I know are going to be here, and we're going to go on this journey to try to win together. And as much as you like to help people and have guys have it grow, ultimately, you have to try to start thinking about and taking care of yourself. And LeBron James, he can only do so much. And I like the fact that he admitted this is foreign to him. Mm-hmm. And there's only certain things that LeBron could be able to help these young guys with. And last night was not a good showing for the Los Angeles Lakers.
Look, between the injuries they've had, the rotations they've changed, the chemistry problems, the trade rumors, is just getting Anthony Davis going to be enough to salvage this season at this point? And we're not even sure if that's going to happen.
Well, I think it's the only thing that could salvage the season. And this is the Lakers yesterday tried to draw a line in the sand, right? They said, you know what? We're not negotiating anymore. We're sick of negotiating with the Pelicans. Sick of negotiating against ourselves. We've offered you. They offered the trade offer I presented a week ago, which a lot of people thought was way too much, plus Josh Hart. And they were going to take on a bad contract.
Everything.
So it was 125 cents on the dollar instead of 90 cents on the dollar for Anthony Davis. And then last night happens. And if I'm the Pelicans and Dell Demps, I watched the game last night. I'm like, oh, you guys sure that's your stance? You sure you're just going to throw away year 16 of LeBron James? Because while I still believe, and I know we're going to get to the Clippers trade in a moment, thanks to the Clippers trade and some other things, the Lakers will still make the playoffs without Anthony Davis. You cannot believe they are any type of real threat in the playoffs with this team as presently constituted. And so it might make Magic and Rob Pelinka get back together and say, is there a price too high to pay to give us a fighting shot this season?
What aren't they offering the Pelicans that the Pelicans could possibly want?
The Pelicans want all the draft picks they're allowed to trade. They want
the ones and the twos.
They want the ones and not two ones, four ones.
Yes.
To go along with four twos, to go along with all five young players. So Zoe, Ingram, Kuzma, Zubats, Hart, and take a bad contract. They want literally the maximum available
assets. Not only do they want to win on the court, I mean, they know that they're getting beyond his value, but they're also trying to win the press conference. Mm-hmm. This is an organization that Anthony Davis talked about. He believes that the ownership, because they own the Saints and the Pelicans, that they favor the Saints. And it's a Saints city. And you know, and the fans turn out more for the Saints. And the ownership supports the Saints. So all these things become very, very important because they've lost a player. Now, how do they win from a PR standpoint?
And Danny Ainge is whispering in Dell Demps here, wait for me, wait for me. But he's not the only GM whispering in Dell Demps here. There's a lot of other GMs, I believe, and people in the league that aren't in big-time markets or are either have bitterness towards LeBron and Clutch Sports or have bitterness towards the power the superstar player, the enormous power the superstar player has acquired, and is saying, don't give in, man. Do not let Anthony Davis dictate exactly where he wants to go and give in to LeBron. So he's got pressure from outside his organization that if he's going to make this trade, he has to get everything from the Lakers.
But just very quickly before we go, if you're the Lakers and you saw what you saw on the court last night, do you just do it?
I'm not giving them all the twos. I mean, there is a price to be paid, but I mean, you have to at some point be like, okay, enough is enough. But I believe Magic Johnson's forced to make this.
If I'm the Lakers, I tell him, listen, if you want all the young guys and all our picks, we are not taking on the bad contract. If they're going to do that, then they have to leave themselves the ability to sign a guy this offseason.
Yes.
So you can, I would almost tell them, take your pick, the young guys and the bad contract, or the young guys and all the draft picks. We can't do all three. And the Pelicans might just say, okay, we'll see you at 2:58 p.m. on Thursday and see if you still feel that way.
All right, take a break, talk more about this. But coming up, one team is going all in an attempt to take down the Warriors. That is next on FS1, and you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We will be right back. All right, let's move on to the big trade in the NBA. Not the Anthony Davis one, not yet at least, but the 76ers one. The Sixers seem to be all in this year, trading for Clippers forward Tobias Harris. It was a six-player deal, which is the Sixers giving up a bunch of future picks, but Harris is having his best NBA season, scoring over 20 points per game. Sixers say they plan on keeping him long-term, along with their three other stars in Jimmy Butler, Joel Embiid, and Ben Simmons. All right, Nick, are the new-look Sixers now the best team in the Eastern Conference?
I can't say that yet, because you got to see them play together. And the Bucks are playing at such a high level. Mm-hmm. And over the next 36 hours, we don't know if Boston's going to make a move, unlikely, or the Raptors are going to make a move. I would say that is likely. But the Sixers were, you guys know, my preseason pick to make the NBA Finals out of the Eastern Conference. And that's when they just had Simmons and Embiid as their frontline players. They then added Jimmy Butler. And now they add Tobias Harris, who, if people don't watch the Clippers, he's the biggest reason that right now they're in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. The Clippers, for a lot of reasons, they don't own their own pick. They're trying to get free agents. They're fine with falling out of the playoffs this year so they can keep their draft pick and for some other salary cap reasons. But he has been excellent. A fringe all-star candidate in the Western Conference. Mm-hmm. See, you mentioned earlier, I had forgotten this, he won player of the month.
Yes.
The first month of the year.
Yep, month of November.
And a guy who has improved year after year in his NBA career. Bounced around the league a lot. This is going to be his fifth team. But 20 points, 43% from three, and now every great lineup, three-man lineup the Sixers had, see, involved J.J. Redick. Not because J.J. Redick's great, he's good, but because spacing and shooting. Now you have a more versatile player that also adds that spacing and shooting. This is a coup for the Philadelphia 76ers.
A big day for Philadelphia and Bill, get Tobias. I think that you mentioned it there, and most people aren't watching the Clippers. And players, typically, that move around to a couple teams, as a fan, we don't necessarily have the faith. Not necessarily the same type of athlete, but look at last year, Victor Oladipo, what he ended up doing after bouncing around to a couple teams. So people around the NBA believe that Tobias Harris has that same type of improvement in his game and is the same type of personality as far as if you tell him something, he will add it to his game. This offseason, Doc Rivers gave him five or six things he wanted him to work on. He worked on them. Doc was so impressed with that. That's how he ended up making that NBA Player of the Month the first season, where he was getting 22-9. So I do believe that Philadelphia and their ability now, you can't force J.J. Redick into the lineup because you know he's a defensive liability. You get a bigger shooter who's also one of the best in the NBA, not only at shooting threes, but at shooting twos and generating his own shot. Well, what does that mean? If you put him on the same side of the court as Joel Embiid, all right, you don't need to run plays for him, and you're going to get more spacing on the court for the most dominant center that we have in the game. So I like the fact, and the caveat to it all would be, I believe he's going to have more confidence going there because, as you mentioned, he's played with five teams. This is the first team to tell him you're part of our future.
Right.
So I believe that the 76ers, in getting him, they're getting a lot of different things, not only a good player, but, wow, just imagine that. Yeah, you're going from L.A., back to an East Coast, but you got a franchise that says, you know something, you're one of the building blocks of our future.
And a franchise that is evidently fine with spending a ton of money. They are saying they are not doing this as a rental. They are planning on signing him to a long-term extension. They have his bird, right? So they go over the cap to do it.
Yep.
Along with Jimmy Butler. Embiid's already on a long-term extension. Ben Simmons will get his next year, a year from this summer. And so you're talking about a team that if all four of those guys stay with the team and get the contracts we expect them to, it'll be the most expensive team in NBA history. But the Sixers have young, very wealthy, new ownership, relatively new ownership, and they think they can win a championship. They think that this year they could compete not only at the top of the East, but present some problems for the Warriors with their size. Shouldn't be forgotten. They also got Boban Marjanovic in this trade, who is the biggest human being in the NBA. And I only mention that because if you're playing a team that wants to go small and you can give them 40 minutes of Embiid and then a few minutes of Boban leaning on him with his 7'4" frame, like, that can wear you out. And so the Sixers are going for it now. And I give them credit. They still don't have a ton of depth, but they are now, they were the only team in the league that had four guys averaging 17 points a game. Now they got five guys who had been averaging 17 points a game. This is a big-time trade for a team that thinks they can win right now.
And we talked this season, last season, about Ben Simmons and the struggles he have. A move like this obviously helps space the court more, a little more for him. But you sort of touched on the Golden State Warriors. You think this team now can compete with the Warriors at least this season?
I think they provide a different set of obstacles that Golden State would have to deal with. Knicks makes a good point. Going big against them, that's what San Antonio did. Now, Kawhi ended up getting hurt, but that's one thing that's been effective when San Antonio, and also we've only seen so much against the Durant version of the Warriors, but San Antonio was one team that went big on them and had some type of success. What I worry about is more on the defensive end. Because from a defensive standpoint, you don't really have a bunch of guys that can run around all those picks that Golden State has or someone to be able to match Steph Curry.
You definitely don't have anyone that can match Steph Curry, but what you do have defensively now is so much length. And Embiid is one of the best defenders in the league.
Yes.
Ben Simmons is one of the best defensive guards in the league. Jimmy Butler, his whole MO has been he is a great two-way player. And Tobias Harris gives you length. So you can now, you got a lot of size to throw at them, even if everyone's going to struggle.
And you,
almost,
you have a lot of versatility because with the Warriors, you have to be able to rotate either four or five players defensively. The best teams can switch off on every end. Joel Embiid is not a liability out on if he gets switched into a pick and roll. So their length and their situational defensive player. So to me, I like the growth of Tobias Harris. Is he going to continue to grow under Brett Brown like he did under under Doc Rivers? Because we saw him grow a tremendous amount this year. I'm excited to see him on the court. You mentioned also there'll be candidates for buyouts if players are going to be bought out to be able to build up their bench.
Like last year.
And then quickly, if you look at what the Clippers get out of this, clearly they now have the room and the ability to sign a couple people in the offseason, which they want. But why are the picks so important for them?
All right, so the first part is if they move Danilo Gallinari, they will be in the same position the Knicks are in. Two max spots. Not only a max spot for Kawhi, who they think they have a real shot at, but the potential ability to get two max players. But the pick they got in this, which is the crown jewel of it, is an unprotected, meaning even if it's the number one pick of the draft, they get it, pick from Miami in 2021. So that might seem like a long ways away. That is a wildly valuable pick because Miami is ticking down. We don't know if Miami all of a sudden is going to have a resurgence. And for them, my guess is the Clippers will never use that pick. That will be part of a trade they make maybe next season if they do get one star in free agency to acquire another one. It's super valuable. They have that pick and the Sixers pick that they can use as trade chips because they owe a pick to Boston, so their ability to trade their own first rounders is restricted. Now they've got some picks they can play with in the trade market. That's why they made this trade.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, is it trade or bust now for the Lakers? That's next on First Things First.
Listen, I know you don't want to hear about it, but 66% of men, 2 out of 3, lose their hair by age 35. When you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. That's why 4Hims is here to give you the chance at correcting that bald spot or receding hairline before it becomes a real problem. Fact, it's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. Don't become a statistic. Try 4Hims. Here's your solution. 4Hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and wellness for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Gotta love science. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. You'll get well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. There's no waiting room, no awkward in-person doctor visits. You'll save hours by going to forhims.com. Answer a few quick questions, and the doctor will review and prescribe you the products you need. All products are conveniently shipped directly to your door. It's really that simple. Order now. Our listeners get a trial month of 4Hims for just $5 today, right now while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to 4Hims.com/first. Spell it out now, F-I-R-S-T. That's 4Hims, F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com/first. 4Hims.com/first.
Madison Square Garden comes alive for the 143rd Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show starting February 10th on Fox and FS1, or watch it on the Fox Sports app. Watch it with you, Nick.
Oh, my wife's going to be watching it, looking for whichever new dog she wants to buy.
Time now for us to go viral. How many do you have right now?
One, but she wants six.
Tom Brady celebrated his sixth Super Bowl parade with his family yesterday, which led to us finding out his daughter Vivian's adorable nickname for one of his favorite targets. Take a listen.
Gronky, awesome. That works. That's about what I would expect a little girl's nickname for Gronk. Can you imagine having, like, lovable Uncle Gronk?
I mean,
that's got to be fun.
A little, oh, yeah, that's the way my kids grew up. Uncle Reggie, Reggie White.
Uncle Randy at all?
No, him and Deron, they was like the same age.
Oh, okay, that's right. No, I forgot about that. That's right, my bad. No, a different situation.
No.
Sorry, all right, I didn't mean to bring up some potential memories. Okay. Sorry about that. I didn't do the math in my head right.
Deron was seven, but
okay, I got the same you.
Age. Yeah, time for stories to start your morning. We're sticking with the Patriots here. So Brady has the most Super Bowl wins of all time, but he says the GOAT moniker, quote, makes me cringe. What'd you make of that, hearing that, CeCe?
That's the way he should be looking at it. The greatest players that we have seen, when you get into this conversation, that's not a conversation they should be having. It's for other people to be a representative. I mean, Tom Brady is doing it the right way. He's been to 9 Super Bowls. He's won 6 of them. If you look at how he's played under the pressure situations, he shouldn't be thinking about that. That's not a debate. That's why they pay me the money, Tom. Absolutely.
And the GOAT, the actual term GOAT, has almost always been used in reference to basketball. Before there was a debate when it was just Jordan. Now that there is a debate, it's only recently that nobody ever said Joe Montana's the GOAT. They say he's the greatest quarterback ever. It's a kind of new thing.
He's the quote.
Oh, okay. Jenna tried to do an acronym for greatest quarterback ever.
I wasn't even trying to. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Anyway,
appreciate that.
I guess we're moving on to the losing side now. Todd Gurley opted not to speak to the media yesterday. Sean McVay reiterated that Gurley's lack of touches were not due to injury, but due to lack of rhythm. I will leave this one to the two of you guys now. Nick, what did you make of this?
All right, we got, at some point, can we please get to the bottom of this? I feel like we had a 6-week national emergency about Malcolm Butler not playing in the Super Bowl. Todd Gurley is one of the best players in the league, and he touched the ball 11 times. He skipped his media avail yesterday. We're not going to hear from him. The only logical explanation is he was injured and the Rams are still concealing it. Otherwise, this is a major gaffe by the Los Angeles Rams.
If the last two games, the NFC Championship and the Super Bowl, if Todd Gurley was healthy, man, Sean McVay, the shine is going to wear off of him. Well, how do you utilize him? Right. Well, how can you get to the two biggest games of your life and him be healthy? So for me, as a player, I still think there's something wrong with Todd Gurley. He didn't even have the same energy on the sideline in those two games.
All right, moving on. Nick Foles told the Eagles he is opting out of his current contract. This will likely lead Philly to franchise the quarterback and try to trade him. That's the case. CeCe, where do you think Nick Foles ends up?
I don't know where Nick Foles ends up, but I'm going to tell you something, though. Wherever he ends up, he won't have the success he had in Philadelphia, because the grass won't be greener than Fly Eagles Fly. We have never seen Nick Foles more comfortable than where he is right now. Nick Foles has played a lot of football. Let's not act as if he's some young quarterback. The surrounding cast, the coaching staff, the Philly fans have made him comfortable. He's played his best football. Buyer, beware.
And I think it's easier to say one place that I would be shocked if he ends up, even though there's a lot of speculation surrounding this team, and that's the Jags. The only team with less cap space going into next year than the Jags is the Eagles. They both have negative cap space, meaning they're over next year's cap already. So the ability for the Jags to bring in Nick Foles when they're still going to be paying Blake Bortles a bunch of money, that's not there. You would think the Broncos, because they like backup quarterbacks there, but they already got one in Case Keenum. Miami, maybe, but there's for the price tag, I think is going to expect, the list of teams is shorter than people might think.
All right, finally, when it comes to the Anthony Davis trade, the ball is in now in the Pelicans' court. The Lakers are waiting for a counteroffer from New Orleans, just a day away from the trade deadline. Nick, how much pressure is on Magic Johnson now to acquire Anthony Davis before the deadline?
Well, more pressure after last night, after watching that team not even show up. And We saw the Cavs go through a similar time like this right before the trade deadline last year. But then they made a total reinvention trade, a dozen players involved, multiple teams, and they basically got a new squad for the final 30 games of the year. But the Lakers right now find themselves in 10th place, 2.5 back, with 28 games to go. It's go time now. Now, they got helped by the fact the Clippers made their trade, so the Clippers, one of the teams above them, should fall back some. But
yeah. Good point.
But I do not think you can look at this year as simply throw it away. You know what I mean? Don't worry. It's about next year, particularly because you don't have a single free agent this upcoming summer who has said to anyone, oh, the Lakers are where I'm going. We've had Kawhi say, I want to go to Los Angeles, but there's two teams there. Right. Anthony Davis made it clear he wants to go to the Lakers. He's not a free agent. And so I understand why Magic wanted to walk away from the table, because he felt he was negotiating against himself and wanted to force the Pelicans to make a counter offer, a real counter offer. But unless you are just going to say, year one of LeBron, when he showed some signs of age with that injury, we're just going to throw it away, then enormous pressure to get Anthony Davis now, not let Boston get into it, and give yourself a shot this season.
That's part of being Magic Johnson, though. That's dealing with the pressure. Magic's always had a great deal of pressure on him. When he took the Lakers job, which he wanted, that job. It was just a matter of several things happening. Number one, could he land LeBron James? Now, to me, LeBron still would have come to the Lakers, even if Magic was not running their basketball operations. He still would have gone to the Lakers. So Magic, yes, was outside LeBron's house waiting for a free agency to open, to pounce. And so we have that. But what I'm worried about is, in a panic, does he make a bad deal? Because what we had to realize through this all, getting from Kobe to LeBron, they had to be patient. Now, do they lose their patience because of right now, Anthony Davis has made it public, I want to be out of New Orleans. I'd like to be with the Lakers. That'd be one of the teams I would sign a long-term deal with. So I believe the pressure has really increased, and you want to get Anthony Davis before the trade deadline, because you don't want the other teams to be involved after that. And you want to, I'll take Anthony Davis, but you can't take him, give up all those picks and that salary, because then you won't be able to get another superstar. So you have to get Anthony Davis, and or I would much rather wait till the summer than take that bad contract and take me out of the running of getting someone else like Kyrie.
Here's the only, I agree that's the ideal. The only problem is, what if the Knicks do win the draft lottery? I've been saying this is only 14% chance, but that's still a one in seven chance. Like, and then all of a sudden the best thing available is Zion Williamson, and that trade would be made. What if a lot of people are surprised and Kyrie does stay in Boston, and therefore then Anthony Davis, Danny Ainge will trade Jason Tatum. Here's the reason to make the trade right now, even if you got to swallow hard and take whatever deal Dell Demps is offering, is because it is hard to think of a scenario where you get Anthony Davis for what would be the next 5.5 years, the year and a half on his contract, the 4-year extension he's going to sign, and you look back and you say, we made a terrible deal. You might say we paid too much, but it's hard to get a player of that caliber for that long of a period of time. What I think Magic was doing yesterday, Jenna, was, and anyone that's ever tried to buy a house, I think, can relate to this. Say the house is on the market for $250,000, and you offer $220,000. You don't really expect them to say yes to the $220,000. You just want them to counter. Because the moment they counter, you're like, okay, I'm going to be able to get this house. Like, they're not hard on two. Like, and so all Magic, I think, wanted was, if they counter, it means they are willing to trade him.
Right.
I want evidence you're actually willing to trade him.
A counter means you're actually negotiating compared to discussing something.
And what I don't think Magic wanted was for them to have no interest in ever trading him, and then Magic keeps upping his offer, and then that be the precedent that's used against him this summer. Show me he's actually on the table before I lay out everything I'll give you. Because if he's not on the table, and then you're going to come back to me this summer saying, well, you already offered me this, you're in a very weak position.
The thing that I don't understand is, for Magic Johnson, what's plan B? So if this doesn't work out, it doesn't seem
it's just wait for the summer. They would probably acquire a third-level player right before the deadline.
But nothing would put a dent into something like this.
No.
All right, let's go back to football. The Super Bowl may be over, but the euphoria in New England is alive and well. The Patriots had their Super Bowl parade yesterday, their sixth in the past two decades, a number shockingly similar to the amount of Super Bowls that they have won. On Sunday, Bill Belichick was caught on camera telling Tom Brady and Super Bowl MVP Julian Edelman will be back after winning Super Bowl 53. CeCe, any reason to bet against the Patriots next season?
Man, I tell people, man, if you know better, you do better. And I know better. I know better. I've been watching this happen for a long, long time. And when you look at the AFC, outside of Kansas City, I mean, who do you think as an organization is ready to dominate in the AFC? Potentially Indianapolis, what they have going there with Frank Wright, getting Andrew Luck back, having that salary cap space, the ability to be able to play physical, keeping Andrew Luck upright. Like, besides that, New England still, man, they still going to be part of this. As long as Tom Brady's there, they're going to be able to win 10 games. If you can win 10 games, you're going to be in the playoffs, and you got a shot. And if you think that overall experience that they have with their core group of guys is not going to be effective, then you didn't watch this season. Because over the last month of the season, which is the last 30 days, they've played the best football in the NFL. They should be Super Bowl champs based on what they did going to Kansas City, winning that game in overtime, taking that drive all the way down the field, and what they did to the Los Angeles Rams in the Super Bowl. So, no, I'm not surprised at all. I know they're one of the favorites because that's what New England – there's nothing – they got 8 new coaches, right, in the league. I mean, so now we got 24. Well, I can eliminate them one by one if you guys wanted to come up with Chris lists, like who should really be on this list. But we got 8 new coaches. There's only 32 teams, all right? So when you break it down, who's gonna knock them off?
Well, and listen, and I have been someone that has been publicly said, I think this is the year for New England, but if this wasn't the year for New England, then why on earth would next year be the year? If the year when they're 11-5, when Brady's play drops off, when they can't win on the road, if this year they win the Super Bowl by their biggest margin of victory in any Super Bowl, like, Belichick's not going to get dumber. Josh McDaniel's still there. That offensive line, which, by the way, has their first-round pick, Isaiah Wynn, from last year, he will get to play for the first time. They have 4 top 75 draft picks. Like, all those things are advantages they have moving into next season. The other advantage they have is their division in this way. I want to make this clear because there's a misnomer. The Pats just beat up on the AFC South and that's it. They win the exact same percentage of games in the division as out of the division. It's 74.7% versus 75.1%. Bill Barnwell published this over the Brady era. So that's not the division advantage. The division advantage is they can have an 11-win season and not worry, oh, man, that's going to make us a wild card team because one of these teams going to win 13. Like, they can get off to a slow start, find their way, and still be guaranteed at least one home game from winning the division, if not a bye. So that's the infrastructure advantage they have there to go along with the enormous, intelligence advantage, if you will, or schematic advantage they have from the coaching staff and Brady.
If there's one position you'd like to see this team shore up for next season, what would it be?
They got to get another wide receiver.
Yeah.
Get another wide receiver. Get a rush, even though they generate rush through scheme on the defensive side. But they need an explosive offensive player, a deep threat, and they'd like an explosive playmaker on the defensive side that they haven't been able to get in a number of years. So those would be my two priorities if I was looking at New England.
And C, they might also need a tight end. Like, that's the – Dwayne Allen, I would imagine, is not going to be back next year's $7 million cap hit. And Rob Gronkowski, we think, could be retiring. Like, that – now, you're not going to get Rob Gronkowski, but you need another pass catcher, whether it, I agree, an outside receiver. We know they prioritize that.
Yeah.
They just couldn't get it. Like, they brought in 33 receivers over the course of the year. They took a flyer on Josh Gordon that was starting to work out before it ended the way it seemed was almost inevitable. Like, they feel, I think, we can see from their decisions, they need somebody there. But there's I'm out of the doubting the Patriots business because of what they showed
this
season. Well, as long as Belichick's there. Because I think I underestimated the enormous advantage they were going to have on everyone in the playoffs, absent of the 53 players. Like, just from the experience and schematics. And go ahead.
I was telling people a lot in Atlanta this weekend, and they were like, well, Chris, do you like New England? I said, I like football played the right way. And New England, if you don't like them, it's because either you don't like because they've won so much and there's a reason to hate on them. But if you like football and you like being able to make you think about what they're going to do, you got to like the way New England attacks things. Their multiples, meaning this week will be one team and the next week will be a different team. And those requirements it takes to be that. I appreciate that.
Sure.
And I know the stress that the players are under, and to perform like that year after year, I got much respect
and
for it.
And to C's point about who's coming, like, the people thought the Jags were on the uptick. They fell apart this season.
After that spicy interview.
The Steelers, I don't think, will be as good next year as they were this year. And this year they missed the playoffs. You mentioned the Colts with all their cap space. The Texans also have a bunch of cap space. Finally have their own picks. But those teams, there's a lot of variables there. The Chiefs, I believe, will be there. I think you believe will be there. And the Patriots. Like, those are the two teams you look at the top of the AFC projecting ahead.
All right, we'll break. Hey, is there a new threat to the Warriors in the NBA? That's still ahead on First Things First. Here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolutions. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify. With more than 150,000 podcasts, including many of the world's most popular self-improvement shows, you can learn how to balance a budget, balance your diet, and even learn how to feel balanced while meditating. All podcasts on Spotify are free, and you can download episodes for those times when you've gone off the grid, you know, to get all that newfound balance back into your life. So start the year off right and start listening to podcasts on Spotify. Happening over there? Welcome back.
Hanging out.
Former NFL head coach Eric Mangini is here.
Good to see you, brother. How are you?
Nothing.
I'll tell you about it after the break. You missed something very funny.
Shocker.
No problem.
The talk these days. If it's not about the Patriots, it's about the Rams. They are coming off a Super Bowl loss where they scored just 3 points. That after averaging over 30 points a game this season. Not great for head coach Sean McVay, who some call an offensive guru. And third-year quarterback Jared Goff, despite the disappointing performance, both vowed to bounce back.
If you can't handle getting gut punched and responding, you know, this business probably isn't for you.
I wish I would have played better. I think I speak for a lot of us when I say that, but, you know, myself in particular, you know, I wish I would have done my part better. And, you know, I can promise next time if we get that opportunity, I will.
It's a resilient mindset, and it's one of, you know, gratitude for what these players and these coaches have done this year. But also the unfinished element of it will just continue to drive you in the right way as you move forward.
Coach, you talk so much about the concept of the Super Bowl hangover and how hard it is to get back once you've been there. What has to happen for this Rams team after what happened in the Super Bowl for them to do this again and get back to the Super Bowl?
Well, this is going to be very hard. And the reason it's hard is you start a month later than everybody else, and that's an adjustment. People are going through the success that they had, and there's this sense of I need to get my element. I need to share in this success. So contracts and free agency and things like that, those things become more difficult. You've got some question marks in terms of which free agents they're going to bring back and what that'll cost. And there's several on defense. But you look at the offensive line. You've got Saffold could be gone.
Yes.
Whitworth could retire. Their center could potentially retire. So that's been a staple of this team, and there's so much continuity.
Yes.
Suddenly, if that disappears, how are they going to handle that aspect of it? And look at their division. You know, San Francisco, we got Garoppolo back. They should be emerging in that division.
We know Seattle's going to be there.
And Seattle's going to be there. So they're going to have to deal with that. And everybody's looking at them. So all the things that they did well last year, they have to do equally as well, if not better, because people are closing the gap on what they've done. And to some degree, they're going to look at the Super Bowl, well, and they're going to say, okay, this is what works. How can we emulate that to attack the Rams moving forward?
And that's the point I was going to seize on, is that listen, everyone doesn't have the personnel the Patriots have. They don't have the coaches the Patriots have. But now they've got a full game film of, okay, so this is a very specific way, without needing a Khalil Mack type, without needing necessarily multiple all-pro, because we saw the Bears shut down the Rams offense as well. But that was, I think, some schematics with Vic Fangio, but a lot of great players making great plays, right?
Yes. And the weather.
And oh, sure, absolutely. I forgot about that component of it, the weather. This is a controlled environment without a ton of all-pro, in fact, no all-pro front seven guys. Really the only all-pro caliber player on the defense, at least according to the voters, Stephon Gilmore, that annihilated them. And so you saw all of a sudden, okay, how much can we duplicate that? And can the Rams make an adjustment? Because Warren Sharp, who's one of the smartest football minds that I know of, put out yesterday almost a play-by-play breakdown of what happened in that Super Bowl. And one of the biggest adjustments the Rams refused to make was the few times they were in two tight end personnel, Goff had time, they made big plays. But they had been in 11 personnel, one tight end, three wide receivers all year long. They stuck with that. They made no adjustment within the game. And they were never successful on those plays in this Super Bowl. The touchdown pass they almost hit, with the one to Cooks was in 12 personnel, their big play down the field previously. They weren't making the adjustments. So how do you deal with the intangible stuff of the egos and the money and who wants, it's my turn now to get paid? And how do you deal with the fact that there is now a bit of a blueprint on how to slow down this team if Todd Gurley is not Todd Gurley?
Gurley with an asterisk, yeah.
Well, there's a number of things that I think Sean McVay needs to look at. He talked about in one of his press conferences, him and Bill Belichick, they met last year at the Combine. Bill Belichick used to watch all his games and text him after almost every game. First of all, don't answer his text next year, okay? Because he took you to school in the Super Bowl. That would just be my first observation. And as far as their personnel, I think, Nick, you made a great point. You need to self-scout yourself. In the NFL, that's what you have to be really good at, so you know what people think of yourself. Be aware. Like I try to tell you to, be aware of yourself and what people are seeing when you're coming at them. During the regular season, the Los Angeles Rams were 90% 11 personnel.
Yep.
All right. Now, Cooper Kupp got hurt, and we saw that Jared Goff, his passing rating, he lost 30 points off that immediately. So I would see, what else am I going to be if I'm going to be a three receiver, which is 11 personnel team? Brian Billick used to always tell me, Chris, you guys as receivers have to force me to keep you on the field. So we have to be able to run the ball just as effective in any other formation. So three receivers, Chris, you have to show me that we can run the ball in this formation.
Like I think if we had two receivers and two tight ends.
I think that they're too predictable. And when they lost Cooper Kupp, they lost one of their main weapons as far as to generate first downs. They don't have a threat at tight end. They don't utilize the middle of the field, which is easier for quarterbacks to be able to throw. So Sean McVay's got to be able to adjust how he's going to attack teams. And for me, I would start with what people think about me. And they think we're an 11 personnel team. I would add some variance to that. And a lot of that would be straight drop backing and throwing the ball down the field that way and running the football effectively, coach, out of that 11 personnel.
Yeah, so I have a lot of reactions to this. First of all, Bill Belichick texting you, he's not in the business of helping other coaches. Like, that's just not what he does. So it's nice. It's nice that you guys are.
So I didn't just make that up.
No. Like, look. It's nice. I'm happy they have that, but he's not helping you. Okay, so let's just eliminate that first of all. I think the 11-12 discussion is a fair discussion, but I saw Patrick Chung hem up Tyler Higbee pretty early on in that game and walk him back. I saw it more as don't compress your formations. And they were compressed throughout the course of the year. So if someone's going to play you, if someone's successful in a phone booth, don't give them a phone booth. Spread it out. Force them to walk out. Force them to play in space against your better athletes. Increase the tempo of the game. Go no huddle. Throw them off some of those ways. I just felt like they played into it when New England had seven guys on the line and they compressed everything down. It's like you're punching with a puncher. Like you don't want to do that. I'd say the other thing is this Todd Gurley issue is not going away, because if he wasn't hurt and he didn't play, it looks bad for him. It looks really bad for him. It looks like he is a player that comes up small in big moments. And if he was hurt and he's covering, you know, that's
but
bad too.
Listen,
it's going to come out, and he skipped the press conference yesterday. This is going to come out because his camp,
Todd Gurley's camp has Todd Gurley's agent or someone, if he's hurt, needs to leak that for his sake. Because this is not fair. Because you're right, it's going to be, and by the way, for McVay's sake, I would say, because it's not just he doesn't come up big in big moments. It's not like Todd Gurley was wildly ineffective in the Super Bowl. He didn't get the chances. Like, I would put a lot of this on Sean McVay. We were talking earlier last year, we had a crisis about Malcolm Butler not playing in the Super Bowl. Malcolm Butler's a fine player. He ain't Todd Gurley. And so that is something that is, until we get a sourced, even if it's anonymously, report about what was going on, that's going to be the specter looming over the entire discussion of the Super Bowl, which is what happened to the best offensive player on the Rams.
All right, Coach, we'll see you a bit later in the show. Coming up, we're starting to get clarity on Anthony Davis's next team. That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, Sports Illustrated senior NBA writer Chris Mannix is here. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Thanks
good morning.
For being with you. Us.
Congratulations, too. Sports Illustrated.
Yes, back. It's like I never left. You know, kept the same business card, same laptop. Left my desk open there. It was nice.
Okay. Good to see you.
Let you back in the building.
I bring greetings from Boston for you, though.
Oh, absolutely.
You're very popular.
You didn't say they were good greetings.
Yeah.
You just brought greetings.
Salutations.
Patriot fans, Celtic fans, yes. Bruin fans.
Hey, Mannix, all eyes are on New Orleans and what they will do with Anthony Davis. Will they trade him to the Lakers by tomorrow's deadline? Will they wait for Boston to make a better offer this summer? Will they go in a completely different direction? According to you, Chris Mannix, the Celtics have refused to dangle Jason Tatum in a trade. And to complicate matters, AD seemed to endorse a move to the Lakers by liking this comment on Bleacher Report's Instagram describing a Lakers trade offer. All right, Chris, where will Anthony Davis end up?
My gut feeling at this point is he's going to end up in Boston. And it happens in the offseason. Look, you've seen the public reports about the Lakers backing off. That's obviously a tactic at this point. They'll re-engage at some point in the next 24 hours. But there are people inside the Pelicans organization that believe steadfastly that making a deal right now doesn't make sense. And I'll be honest, in canvassing the league the last week or so to talk about different things, this subject comes up, and I've yet to talk to an executive that thinks it's a good idea to make a deal for Anthony Davis before the deadline. The only downside for making a deal in the eyes of so many is that you have to hold on to this guy for 3 months and deal with the fallout that comes from that. But a lot can change in a few months. The draft lottery odds come out and Boston get into the mix. And I think once Boston gets into the mix, and we can discuss all the variables that Boston has to account for, but once Boston gets into the mix, their eagerness for Anthony Davis, and they've been frothing over this guy for the better part of 2 years, their eagerness to get Anthony Davis will cause them to put a big-time offer on the table.
What is the big-time offer that doesn't involve Jason Tatum?
The biggest offer involves Jason Tatum. They could throw a few other things out there. Look, they're going to try. And what I said, look, the Celtics are not willing to discuss specifics with the Pelicans right now because they know if they tie themselves to a specific offer, they have to hold up that end of the bargain or else their credibility across the league is shot. So they're not specifically tying themselves and saying Jason Tatum is off the table. What they're saying is just hold off. We'll discuss this in the summertime. They do believe internally that it may take Jason Tatum to get a deal done.
Well, of course. I would argue that I think people in my friends in Boston have drastically overvalued Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier or whomever else. The crown jewel of this is Tatum. The only way there is a trade piece available better than Tatum is if whomever gets the Zion lottery ticket puts that on the market. And I would argue the only team that would do that is the Knicks. Cleveland's not going to do that because they couldn't keep him. Atlanta, Phoenix, you understand what I'm saying? None of those teams would trade 8 years of Zion for 1 year of Anthony Davis.
No.
So even though Tatum doesn't look as great as he did at the end of last season, I agree with you that Tatum is going to be an all-star, the all-NBA caliber player that the Pelicans so desperately want. But you asked, what is the downside? To me, the downside is very simple. It's that the Celtics don't offer Tatum, which they have not committed to do, and the Pelicans are in a position where it's the Kawhi trade. And it's like, wait, for Kawhi Leonard, we gave up him and Danny Green, and we got back DeRozan, Poeltl, and one first-round pick, when they have sitting out in front of them a trade right now. When I presented the Ingram, Ball, Kuzma, Zubats, and two firsts, people said that might be a little too much. The Lakers have now added in Hart, and they'll take back bad salary. If Jason Tatum never comes available, there is not a better trade available than that one.
But you are sitting there, you're assuming that that trade is off the table come July 1st. That's your argument, that trade is gone July 1st. I don't believe that. I believe that trade or something better is going to be there around that same time.
So I guess you're right that I am and if the Pelicans don't make the move, what they're saying is, we think no matter what the Lakers say, that what you offer at 2:55 p.m. tomorrow is going to be the same thing you start with in July. Mm-hmm. But if Kyrie is left and Tatum's not out there, the Lakers won't have to make as big of an offer.
Okay, let's say all that does happen. You think Anthony Davis is going to stay in Boston?
I think if Kyrie Irving is staying, then Anthony Davis will stay.
I know we're going to talk more about the Boston angle with you later, because the Kyrie stuff is a real tenuous situation, I think is fair to say, and that's something you've reported on, a lot of people have reported on. But there is a reason that people don't like there's a reason that Anthony Davis released his trade demand when he did, right? It was a signal to everyone, I want to go to the Lakers, and that will naturally cool the market league-wide. You can say that was unfair to the Pelicans. You can say they shouldn't have done that, but they did it. There's a reason he also included three new teams on the list, none of which are going to be in the market for him. The Clippers are clearly going after cap space. We saw that even more with the trade last night. The Bucks do not have the asset side from Giannis. 0% they would ever trade Giannis. And the Knicks already tried to trade him, Chris Stapps, and they said, we're not interested.
And unless they win the lottery with Zion, that's the only way they can get back in the business.
And so I feel like, Danny Ainge, is another one of the reasons that he's saying wait, is because even if they don't get Anthony Davis, he would rather the Lakers not get him right now. He'd rather LeBron not get him right now. And GMs across the league would rather this increased power of the superstar player be halted a bit. Isn't it in his interest for some other team to draw a line in the sand and say, our superstar players under contract are not holding us hostage? Isn't it in a lot of teams' interest for the Pelicans to hold the line with Anthony Davis, even if it's not necessarily in their interest because of the precedent?
I think it's in a lot of teams' interest. I don't think it crosses the mind of Danny Ainge. I just don't think he thinks like that. I think he's so singularly focused on his own team and how to make that team the best team they could possibly be that he's not worried about a precedent that might be set by dealing Anthony Davis. And look, Even if they don't put Jason Tatum on the table, they can still make an offer that would be competitive with the Lakers.
What is it?
First of all, the draft pick situation is entirely different. I heard you just an hour ago singing a song about that Miami Heat draft pick and how valuable it's going to be. What's a more valuable draft pick, the Miami Heat's draft pick in 2021 or potentially an unprotected Memphis pick in 2 years?
In the same year, 2021.
Same year. What's more valuable?
Miami or Memphis? I'd say it's a coin flip.
Miami doesn't lose. Miami plays to win every single season. Memphis can't win. Apples and oranges.
Okay, all right. Fair enough. If you want to say Memphis is more likely to be awful in 2 years than Miami. Okay, so there's that.
Okay, there's the Memphis pick. There's the Sacramento pick. If the Kings don't make the playoffs this year, that could be a lottery pick, probably on the higher side, but a lottery pick. And then the Celtics can throw in some of their own picks down the line. The Lakers right now are really only offering their own picks. And how valuable are those Laker picks going to be if you move Anthony Davis onto the Lakers? Granted, 6 years from now, if some of those picks are pushed back, that could be a valuable asset. But right now, the Celtics draft picks are not just better than what the Lakers can offer. They're significantly better what the Lakers can offer.
Yeah, regardless of all this, though, I just don't see Anthony Davis signing. So Danny Ainge, he can't. He's not going to ring.
Let me ask you this. This I don't really get. And I've tried to stay, like, not – people accuse me of too partisan sure. of this. But, like – Anthony Davis and his agent, Rich Paul, comes out. The first thing Rich Paul says, Anthony Davis wants to go to a place where he can consistently win and get championships.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is Boston not the place you would want to be? You can't objectively say, and I know LeBron's a great player, but you can't objectively say that going to the Lakers presents Anthony Davis with a better chance of winning championships over the next 5 years than to a Kyrie Irving-led Celtics team. We can, again, debate
some
that.
Some of these things that athletes say are window dressing.
Okay.
Because they really can't say what
but
they want.
But he said it out three times.
Okay, just, like just hold on. Okay. I let you talk. I let you run the segment. All right? I know you.
You
they
said you were going to do that.
I know they hired you at Sports Illustrated. But I did. Okay? So settle down. All right? Now, his dad. I didn't have a father in my life, but I've had people that had an influence in my life. His dad said he didn't like what happened to Isaiah Thomas. Now, when that happened to Isaiah Thomas, we thought it was going to have a ripple effect. Now, not an immediate ripple effect, but people didn't like to see. And did Boston do the right thing basketball-wise? Yes, they did. But what happened to IT and as far as his career and everything went, they did the right thing. But people saw it, and the optics just weren't good. His dad said that, and Clutch Sports don't want him in Boston.
No, so, they do not.
Okay, so those
but
things. So those things are real. How are you going to get beyond those things? Forget about all the picks and everything. How are you going to get beyond that?
Okay, the Isaiah stuff is a little bit bonkers because even if you ask Isaiah right now, Isaiah tried to get back to Boston this past year. Like, Isaiah does not, I don't think he feels that way.
It's the money.
It's the money.
He didn't get the money. It's not personal. It's Isaiah had an opportunity. He didn't get the money, and everyone else
okay, but so do you want to play for a team that will just, like, hand out Kobe Bryant type of contracts? Like these golden parachutes?
You know what? So that's the thing is, that is the perfect example. What the Lakers did with Kobe was, objectively speaking, in real time, a bad decision for that year and the next year and the year after Laker team. And it was a very good decision for further burnishing the Lakers' reputation as a team that takes care of its players.
You think?
What the Celtics did with Isaiah Thomas was absolutely unequivocally a good basketball decision for that year, the next year, and maybe years moving forward if they keep Kyrie. It was a bad decision as far as the way the organization would be looked at by certain players and people close to certain players. Those things both can be true, but you painted the picture as to why would Anthony Davis not want to be in Boston. I don't know, but he doesn't. Like, the thing is, it don't matter. Like, even if logically.
And
like,
we don't even know if Kyrie wants to be in Boston. He's been there.
Okay, but
you guys haven't won him.
This is this week.
Is that true or not?
What?
The Boston has not won Kyrie over.
We don't know until July 1st. I don't know. But you said Anthony Davis doesn't want to be in Boston. He doesn't want to. First, it was the Lakers. He only wanted to be there. But then it's Milwaukee. He wants to be there. And the Clippers and the Knicks. What's next in the list? Who else? Does he want to go to Miami?
I don't know, but there's 30 teams, and right now it sure seems like the 30th is Boston.
Let's wait and
That's
see.
That's what I know.
Let's
okay.
wait and see.
And I know we'll talk more about Kyrie and the Celtics.
We are going to. We'll talk much more about Kyrie and the Celtics. Stick around, Maddox, coming up. One team is going all in an attempt to take down the Warriors. That is next on First Things First. Yeah. In 11 days, the greatest event in motorsports is back. The Daytona 500 kicking off the 2019 NASCAR season, February 17th, only on Fox. We'll get to the Sixers trade in a second, but first, a couple of big plays from last night. Clippers, Hornets, Montrezl Harrell thinks he's got an open dunk. Miles Bridges says, oh, I don't think so, my friend.
Montrezl Harrell, one of the more underrated players in the league, has been doing this to a lot of people. Miles Bridges says, no, sir.
Thunder Magic. Russell Westbrook reaches into his bag of tricks, gets past Aaron Gordon for the easy two.
Mannix, now this is 7 triple-doubles in a row. Now, my partner over here, Nick, said, man, people are tired of triple-doubles.
I don't think they're tired of triple-doubles. They're used to them.
Right. it doesn't have the shock factor it once does. Russ going to average one for the third straight year.
Yeah,
nobody cares anymore.
Not bad defense either by Aaron Gordon. He stayed with them for most of that.
Aaron Gordon, a little interesting trade chip, mm-hmm. potentially.
Everybody, almost everybody in Orlando is available.
Lakers and Pacers and Miles Turner Turner denies Kyle Kuzma's dunk attempt with an incredible block.
I was watching this game live, unfortunately, and really? The great Quinn Buckner, just on the NBA League Pass, Pacers announcer, just screams, primal scream, smothered chicken. It was a la the old Roy Hibbert blocks when you used to hear him get that loud. It's a great play by Miles
Turner. Quinn Buckner's one of the guys that recruited my brother to go to Indiana. Quinn Buckner was there 72 to 76. My brother was there 76 to 80.
Wow. Yeah. Learn something new every day.
Mm-hmm. All right, moving on to a big trade in the NBA. The Sixers seem to be all in this year, trading for Clippers forward Tobias Harris. It was a six-player deal, which is the Sixers giving up a bunch of future picks for Harris. But Harris is having his best NBA season, scoring over 20 points per game. Sixers say they're planning on keeping him long-term, along with their three other stars in Jimmy Butler, Joel Embiid, and Ben Simmons. Chris Mannix, are the new-look Sixers now the best team in the Eastern Conference?
Ooh. No, not yet. Look, one thing we've learned this year is that chemistry matters. The teams at the top of the conference, Toronto, yes, that they flipped out Kawhi Leonard and DeMar DeRozan, but most of the rest of that team was basically intact. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee, same team from last year with some minor tweaks on the outside. Chemistry matters. The Celtics have struggled because they've tried to incorporate two all-star level talents back into the mix. The Sixers, just a couple of months ago, bring in a Jimmy Butler, have to change their style of play. Mm-hmm. Now they're bringing in Tobias Harris. Now, Tobias Harris on paper makes a lot of sense to them because he's a three-point shooter, floor spacer. That's everything that they need in Philadelphia. But this is also a guy that led the Clippers in shot attempts, around 16 per game. Their leading scorer. Is he going to be able and comfortably to slip into a reserve role? The other reason this is risky is that the Sixers, we talk about how much money they're going to spend, and they will if they can keep these guys. If they can keep these guys, because both Butler and Harris are unrestricted free agents. So if this season ends poorly and the Sixers try to play games with some of the money, they could wind up losing one or both in this offseason. So I admire the big swing Elton Brand took, but there's a lot of risk attached to it.
Well, and listen, the reason that I give them an enormous amount of credit is we knew they had an absolute can't-miss blue-chip guy in Embiid. And what I perceive to be a can't-miss blue-chip guy in Ben Simmons, I know that's more of a controversial opinion for some, but they didn't have the rest of the roster figured out at all. Their first-round pick this year, Zaire Smith, he's going to miss the season because they have terrible injury luck. They were relying on Landry Shamet. J.J. Redick is a nice player but should never be as featured prominently at this point in his career as the Sixers were having to. So they make a swing and bring in Jimmy Butler, and now they bring in a fringe all-star in Tobias Harris. And now you look at it and you say, okay, a team that had two super high-level players now has three super high-level players and a fourth player that's right beneath that level. They are incredibly long. I think they will be even better defensively. I think that the spacing is enormous because if you're going to play a true center in Embiid and Ben Simmons, the other guys on the court better be able to shoot. So now Butler, Harris, and Redick, like, that's a tough five-man lineup. Now, the bench is weak as it's been, and you mentioned, earlier, last year they were in the buyout market, Ilyasova, Bellinelli. Maybe they'll be there again. The money's interesting.
They have to be.
But the Sixers, according to all reports, they say, we're bringing them all back. We're going to try to bring them all back. And luxury tax be damned. They got the bird rights on both these guys. It would end up being the most expensive team ever once Simmons' new contract were to kick in if they brought them both back. But this team is absolutely more dangerous now than it was 24 hours ago.
Well, they're more dangerous now, but I'm going to get back to your two points. Chemistry. Chemistry is important in basketball, as we did see earlier in the year. Jenna and I were having a conversation. Jenna was like, hey, man, Chris, you worrying about these guys trading? I'm not particularly worried, especially when you got a couple guys in there last year. They have to make it work. Like, Tobias has bounced around. This is the only organization that he's been with. He's been with five other teams that said, you're a part of our future. So I expect him. Now, Jimmy Butler is the wild card in that. And what did Jimmy Butler complain about a couple weeks ago?
Right, not being featured enough offensively.
In the offense. So your point as far as shots, you're bringing one guy who's going to be an unrestricted free agent, who's used to getting 16 shots, having the best year of his career, NBA player of the month in the Western Conference the month of November. So that's a concern. Like, where do all these shots, are they going to play at a pace that they're going to play up and down now? Because you got Joel Embiid, and why you get Harris is to allow him to space the court on the side of the court that Joel Embiid's on. So they're going to have an issue that I worry about this, the same thing I was worried about before this trade.
It's a lot to
ask. Who's
going to
be their point guard?
Well, I mean, Reddick's going to fill in, then T.J. McConnell will fill in some of the cracks there, too. But look,
so this, that right there is going to be a problem, ultimately, I believe, keeps them from being in the finals in the East.
Look, it's a lot to ask for a team to kind of come together in the final 25 games and become a championship team, even an Eastern Conference championship team with all that's around him. What I think in the next 24 hours, the one thing that might be able to push them a little bit closer is if they trade Markelle Fultz. It's time to trade Markelle Fultz. You can't expect him to come back this year and give you anything of value. He's been out too long, and he's been dealing with too much. Markelle Fultz, though, across the league, still has some value as long as you price him right. Like, you can get, I'll throw this name out there, a Trevor Ariza type, a sixth, seventh man in exchange for Markelle Fultz. The downside
is... That is selling low on Fultz,
agreed. But do you really think, and this is a longer conversation, but do you really think Markelle Fultz is ever going to get his value back in Philadelphia? I think he might be able to get it back down the line in a different situation where he's no longer the number one pick. But in Philadelphia, I just don't think it's going to happen. If you're the Sixers and you're going all in on this season to try to make something happen, Fultz could bring you back something back in return that could really help you.
Yeah, I believe Fultz's problems are deeper than the Sixers. So I don't believe it's a location problem. I don't believe it's an expectation problem. I believe
you think the problems will follow him wherever he goes?
Yes.
Quickly, let's just talk about this from the Clippers' perspective. What do they get out of the future draft picks they picked up and then the salary cap room they got?
Well, listen, they now are, if they move Bellinelli, that's another guy that could get moved.
Gallinari.
I'm sorry, yeah. I said Bellinelli. Yeah. Pardon me. If they moved in a little Gallinari, they're going to have two max spots just like the Knicks are. And they are the 2021 Miami unprotected pick that we were discussing. I don't expect the Clippers to actually use that pick. I think that is lubrication for a trade. I think that is, if you don't get two superstars this summer, if you get Kawhi Leonard, and then you have cap space to absorb another superstar and you want to make a trade work, they were going to have trouble trading their own first-rounders because they owe one to Boston, but it's probably not going to convey this year. So there's complications there. They now have got a Philly pick they can trade and that Miami pick from Philadelphia that's unprotected in 2021. So they have assets to go along with the ability to sign superstar-level players.
You may have to attach a draft asset to get off Gallinari. Not the Miami pick. You may have to attach something to get off that contract to create the double max space. But this is going to be a fascinating offseason for big markets because the big market teams, all four of them, two New York markets and the two LA markets, either have max or double max space. We're going to find out if those markets are really appealing.
It's already a great offseason, and we're still in this season. Chris, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, what has to happen for the Rams to get back to the Super Bowl? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we're going viral. Rob Gronkowski celebrated his third Super Bowl parade yesterday. And in typical Gronk fashion, he did not disappoint, busting out the crowd favorite air guitar. I mean, the guy was born to
be in parades. To be drinking in public, partying with a bunch of other drunk people. I agree.
So, yeah, but parades for sure.
This is one of the reasons... I would imagine it's hard to walk away. You can be very successful in other industries. They ain't never throwing you no parade. We'll see.
What? No, it's a drug, man. That right there is hard to walk away from right there.
Right. The adoration. No matter how good of a wrestler you are, it's no parade. Guy that won the Royal Rumble, no parade. WrestleMania, no parade. 10-time World Heavyweight Champion Undertaker, no parade.
I got nothing to say to that, but yeah.
It's true. Just letting you know.
Time for stories to start your morning. Bad night for the Lakers. They lost by 42 points to the Pacers. As for the trade rumors, Lakers are reportedly waiting on a counteroffer from the Pelicans for Anthony Davis as talks have seemingly gone cold. Nick, are trade rumors impacting the Lakers on the court, do you think?
Yeah, I do. I do think it. I think last night we saw it. Where it was most evident was on the defensive end. What do you ask guys for on defense? Attention to detail, commitment to your teammates, and effort. And if you think these guys ain't going to be my teammates, the details don't matter because you ain't going to be my coach. And you guys don't care about, of course, your effort's going to lag. So you saw it there. It was an embarrassing performance. It looked a lot like the Cavs last year in the days leading up to that trade deadline when they got beat by 32 at home.
That's why I think this puts more pressure on Magic Johnson to be able to do something when you lose a game like this. It's a game that they needed to win. Now, they are a little shorthanded, but overall effect, These young players are not dealing with it well.
And you're right, needed to win. The Pacers without Oladipo are not a not a high-level team.
To the NFL now, Nick Foles told the Eagles he's opting out of his current contract. This will make Foles a free agent, likely forcing the Eagles to use the franchise tag and then try to trade the quarterback. See, where do you think Nick Foles ends up?
I don't know where Nick Foles is going to end up, but whoever is that fan base, I'm just going to tell you, buyer, beware. Because I think the best football we've seen from Nick Foles will only happen in Philadelphia. The comfort level he has with that team, where was he thinking about when he got to Philadelphia? Yeah, he was thinking about quitting football. Now, leaving there, I don't think you can create that type of environment. He thrived as an Eagle.
A lot of people are speculating he's going to end up in Jacksonville. That will not happen. The only team with less cap space than the Eagles, I'm sorry, than Jacksonville is the Eagles. Jacksonville is already over the cap for next season. Next season ain't even started yet. And they just gave Blake Bortles last year that odd extension to where they're tied to him for another season. Denver's tied to Case Keenum for another season. Not a lot of obvious landing spots for Nick Foles, considering the fact you're going to have to sign him to a pretty rich extension the moment you trade for him.
All right, moving on to the Rams. They're coming off a Super Bowl loss where they scored just 3 points. That after averaging over 30 points a game this season. Not great for a head coach in Sean McVay, who some call an offensive guru, and not great for third-year quarterback Jared Goff. Despite the disappointing performance, though, both of them vowed to bounce back.
If you can't handle getting gut punched and responding, you know, this business probably isn't for you.
I wish I would have played better. I think I speak for a lot of us when I say that, but, you know, myself in particular, you know, I wish I would have done my part better. And, you know, I can promise next time if we get that opportunity, I will.
It's a resilient mindset, and it's one of, you know, gratitude for what these players and these coaches have done this year, but also the unfinished element of it will just continue to drive you in the right way as you move forward.
All right, CeCe, both talk about the gut punch of losing the Super Bowl, but how hard is it to go through what you went through and then to try to get back there the next season?
I don't think it's going to be that difficult for them, given who they are in their career. I believe Sean McVay is a special coach. And if you look at what he's done in two seasons, double-digit wins. This year, multiple playoff wins, winning on the road in New Orleans. Like, these are the signs of a great football coach. Jared Goff, where did he do in those 2 years with Sean McVay? Now, we know that losing Cooper Kupp really hurt Jared Goff. So now it's just a matter of, if they had won this game, would they be looking at themselves of how can I improve my game? And you look at yourself different in wins than you do in losses. But both of them, I thought, would have been trying to improve drastically on their limited amount of experience in the league. Jared Goff's got to do better against pressure in his face. It's not something he's thrived in. Sean McVay, he's got to have more variance in his offense. He's got to have more formations to be able to deal with a defense. He can't be as predictable as he is in the formations that he uses. Bill Belichick took him to school in the Super Bowl. So for me, how does he get the tight end more involved? Is he going to throw to the running backs more? Because all these things help quarterbacks. If you look at the quarterbacks that are having the highest percentage, watch how many times they throw to the tight ends and are their running backs. So I believe that they both will improve. This is a great opportunity because this Rams team, they were all in. And they have the type of owner. He is super rich. So they're not going to be looking for some, you know, bargains and everything. They got a lot of players they have to deal with on that roster. I believe in the coaching staff. I believe Jared Goff's going to be an elite quarterback in the league compared to other people.
You mentioned the wealth of the owner, and while that's a huge benefit, they still have the hard cap every team in the league has. And one of the downsides.
Yeah, but when I say that, all owners that are rich aren't committed to winning
of course.
At all costs.
And, right.
Like, he's committed to being the owner. He's been an owner in multiple sports. Like, he is committed to trying to spend the dollars to put everything they need. And they got a new stadium coming.
And even by professional owner standards, he's super rich. He's not quite the late Paul Allen rich, but he's
he got less money than his wife.
Correct. Well, she's a Walmart heir, which helps as well. But neither here nor there.
Here we are.
The point is that the downside to going all in is you are going to eventually have to pay the Piper cap-wise. That won't be this year, but that is next year. So they got one more year. But this year, they don't got a lot of draft picks to play with now. Like, they traded picks during the season for Dante Fowler. They traded a pick for Marcus Peters. We saw that this past year they traded a pick for Brandon Cooks. Like, there's real ramifications. You don't have as many young, talented players on your roster. You don't have as many young, cheap players on your roster. And Ndamukong Suh signed a one-year prove-it deal for $14 million. I don't expect that he'll be back. They tried to address their linebacking core by trading for Dante Fowler. He now can leave if he wants to. So those are real things they're going to have to deal with this offseason that I think they'll be better equipped to deal with this offseason than in future offseasons. The bigger picture questions they have to answer are, what happened to Jared Goff over the last 2.5 months of the year, right after Cooper Kupp got hurt? He went from a guy that was 26 touchdowns, 6 picks, they were 10-1, to a guy that was 7 touchdowns, 8 picks, with a 74 passer rating, they were 5-3. That's question one. Question two, will other teams exploit what Bill Belichick showed them in the Super Bowl? The blueprint Belichick and the Pats laid out for how you really give the Rams trouble. Will other teams be able to exploit that, or was it a one-off? And the last one is, the question that will remain a question until it is answered, where in the world is Todd Gurley? What was the deal with Todd Gurley? What happened with Todd Gurley that allowed, yes, he was out the last couple weeks of the year. The first playoff game you guys played against Dallas, he was a dominant player against a really good run defense. What happened to him in the NFC Championship game and then in the Super Bowl that led to him having fewer than 20 touches in those two games combined? Those are the three questions the Rams have to answer going into next season. They try to defend their NFC title.
But then on top of that, as Coach mentioned, you're also a month behind everyone else game planning. Your schedule is going to be harder next year. Yeah. Other teams are going to be able to, I mean, everyone's looking at tape of your team and the way you did things. Maybe you don't get away with as many trick plays, or maybe they can see that coming. So I'm sure those all factor in on top of where's Jared Goff. We'll have a new quarterback coach again now. What happened to Todd Gurley, and where does this team, you know, structure-wise go?
Absolutely. I believe that the Rams are on the right track, though. I don't think that they're going to come back to the pack. I don't believe they're going to have a huge Super Bowl hangover. And when you trade those draft picks for those players, you got to be able to sign Dante Fowler. You also have to be able to sign Peters. Like, you have to sign those players because you traded draft picks. I'm looking forward to seeing how they grow this team.
And then last point, but there is a reason why the Patriots were the first team to lose a Super Bowl and get back to the Super Bowl. Forget winning it. Get back there. Since the Bills run in the early 90s. It's very difficult. Like, there's not a lot of precedent for a team coming that close to winning the championship and being back the next year playing for a championship once again.
All right, time now for Nick's favorite segment, and it's called Nick Makes a List.
Oh,
that's just a coincidence. We all know Anthony Davis might be on the move soon, but is he the most valuable asset in the NBA?
All right, so this is very simple. So contracts matter in this, which is why, for example, Kevin Durant's not on this list. He's only got a few months left on his contract. So the number 7 most valuable asset in the NBA is Steph Curry, the greatest shooter we've ever seen. He's on a rich contract, but it's a long-term contract. You would not trade Steph Curry straight up for any player except for the ones we're about to unveil. Number 6, James Harden, another guy who's locked up long-term, playing at the highest level we've seen an offensive player in this league play in at least 30 years. See, my guess is you maybe would have those two guys flipped. You Harden above Steph.
I'm going to let you roll with your list, and then I'm going to devour it at the end.
Okay, no problem. Number 5, the best player alive, LeBron James. He's also on a long-term deal. We know that he's got at least 3 more super high-level years left, so you wouldn't trade LeBron straight up for anyone other than the following players. Number 4, Anthony Davis with an asterisk. The asterisk is assuming you're one of the teams he will commit to long-term. And then my favorite top 3. Number 3, guy who's not even in the league yet, Zion Williamson. I would not trade Zion for Anthony Davis. I would not trade Zion for LeBron James. He is the most can't-miss prospect to come into the NBA well since this guy, number 2, Luka Doncic. Luka Doncic has already shown me if he never improves 1%, and stays at this level the rest of his career, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. And he is, by the way, going to improve. And the number 1 most valuable asset in the league, the only truly untradeable player in the league, Giannis. He might be the best player alive right now. LeBron's trying to hold on to that title. Giannis is the most valuable piece in the NBA. There's my 1 through 7. Chris Carter, your thoughts?
You're not even devouring it? You're just going to let
you
it
You got
live?
Two jobs, but you think that, man, you...
I would think what?
What? Okay,
go ahead.
I got you.
What was the two jobs knock?
I don't agree with Zion.
I think
Zion's going to have to be able to shoot a little bit better to be the third best asset in the NBA.
Not
right
if he's
now.
Just dunking on everybody, see? You don't got to shoot if you're hanging on the rim.
Okay, yeah. That's what you said about Ben Simmons, too.
This is a creative list.
Thank you, Jenna Wolf. I got a
really
lot of pushback from our
I know you did.
Hey, America, watching the show, our producers don't necessarily think you're as smart as I think you are. They're like, ah, people are going to be able to follow it. What do you mean? Why don't you use the best player list? I said, it's trade season. Yeah. Our viewers are smart,
that was
but they're going to understand
if
it.
If you're so smart, why is only seven on the list? Like, you always have these weird numbers. Hey, I got the top five. I got the top.
I don't like top five.
Eight.
Because I thought it was a clear-cut top seven. After we get past seven, at eight,
yeah,
who
that's
would
where LeBron, greatest players ever. Let's go Jordan.
I like the
Let's
list.
Go Kareem.
Like
Let's go Bill
gotta take
Russell.
A break.
Oh, my God. You don't even believe
Kobe,
that.
Then LeBron.
Coming
See,
up.
I told you they'd like
Brady
it, Pep.
Brady and Belichick take get that. Lombardi number seven next year. That's next on First Things First.
I'm get Mannix, dude. They got another spot over at Sports Illustrated for you.
What? Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm very happy where I'm at.
People like
it. I'll write a list for you, Sports Illustrated, though.
Back here with Coach Mangini. The Super Bowl may be over. The Super Bowl euphoria in New England is alive and well. The Patriots had their Super Bowl parade yesterday, their sixth in the past two decades. On Sunday, Bill Belichick was caught on camera telling Tom Brady and Super Bowl MVP Julian Edelman, "We'll be back," after winning Super Bowl 53. That was the most times I've said Super Bowl in 35 seconds. Coach, any reason to bet against the Patriots not being back in the Super Bowl next year?
Well, you know what today is in New England? It's just Wednesday. It's just Wednesday. I mean, they've been to nine Super Bowls. They've won six Super Bowls. They've been through this whole process before, and just like anything else, when you go through something multiple times, it's not like, what do we have to do? What's the schedule going to be like? How are we going to adjust? It's just another day there, and they'll get ready for the off season, and they've been in this situation before, so the coach will get a couple weeks off. They may or may not go to the combine. The scouting started, and then they'll come in and figure out what they have to do for free agency, the draft, and they'll just move forward. And so there's no real reason that they shouldn't be talked about in that light. Look at the division. Who's challenging them in the division?
So that's they're already in the playoffs.
Yeah. So that's the first step, and then you've got your quarterback back who continues to defy time, and there's no reason to believe that won't happen again. You've got the offensive staff back, and I know Brian Flores is going to move on, but they're developing other young coaches there. Maybe this is a time for Stephen Belichick to actually get more responsibility there. Who was coaching the part of the secondary, the safeties. It's just such a different situation than what the Rams are going through right now, where they've got to navigate through this uncharted territory. New England's not dealing with that, and there's none of the controversy that you had last season. This is a pretty stable time where they can truly just move on to the next moment, which is prepping for the draft.
They've got four picks in the top 75. If you were, because they have the additional second-round pick that was the Bears' second-round pick and then their own pick. See,
and they pick up their number one from last year, who was hurt all season.
Correct.
He comes back. And
Isaiah Wynn, the guy they got for Brandon Cooks, essentially never played. But the reason I was mentioning it was, if you were working with the front office, what would your number one priority or your top few priorities be team building wise? They got a little bit of cap space. They got those draft picks. What are some areas where you feel like, despite winning the Super Bowl, they could improve upon going into next season?
Some of that's going to depend on which one of their free agents they bring back and what's available in free agency. You know, Bill likes drafting tight ends. He's drafted a lot of tight ends over time. Typically, he's not going to draft a wide receiver. He's drafted one wide receiver in the first round. And what is this, 24, 25 years of being a head coach. So odds are they're not drafting a wide receiver. But you got a good shot to at least bring in someone to, if Gronk is back, to help out that situation and to eventually replace him. So I could see that being one spot that they go to. And maybe they go to receiver a little bit later. At some point, they've got to address the quarterback
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Do you think they should address? We thought last year it was seemingly unanimous that obviously the Patriots, one of their top picks, is going to draft a backup quarterback, a young quarterback. They obviously didn't. They rolled with Hoyer all year. Hoyer didn't take a single meaningful snap. Do you think that would be on their priority
but
list?
But it paid off for them. They got Sony Michel.
Of course. They got Sony Michel when people thought maybe they were going to draft Lamar Jackson or something. Like,
Didn't they draft a quarterback late last year? I mean
with a premium pick. Pardon me. No, not the Garoppolo situation, not where they look at a guy that they think could eventually take over.
I would potentially, if there's a guy that pops and also drops into that second round area, potentially. But they've done a good job with being able to develop guys as well. And I'm not sure how they feel about the player they drafted last year. But it's to me, it'd be more of a interior tight end type spot.
This is one of the things with New England when drafting players, because if you want to continue to play multiples, which they're going to do defensively and offensively, it's hard to do that. Now, they're always going to groom younger players, but New England's also going to pick your roster. So you can look at the draft picks. They're not as exciting to me as who on some other team didn't play the kind of football, and then they end up being the next Edelman, or
Wes Welker when he became free in Miami. And what's great for them is new head coach in Miami, new head coach in New York. They're going to want their own guys. Mm-hmm. They're going to send a bunch of guys.
And those
into the
are
world.
Guys that they have the most intel on because they're in the division. They play those teams twice.
Yeah, you play them over and over again. You really got a good feel for them. Transition happens all around the league. All those new head coaches will push these guys into the market and they'll be undervalued. And then New England, the other advantage they have is the scouting staff has so many reps under their belt. Everybody knows what they're looking for. Everybody knows what a slot receiver in New England looks like. Everybody knows what they're looking for on defense. Everybody knows the mental makeup of the type of players that they want. So you can go out into the marketplace with certainty, where most teams are guessing, what does my head coach want? What do we really need? There's not that clarity of the parts that need to be put into play to make the machine keep running.
So it just sounds like they've got it all figured out, that it's a very clear path all the way. What are the questions that they really do need to address, though, over the course of the next couple months, especially to get this team back to where it was?
Well, I don't think it sounds like it. They've proven that they've had it pretty well figured out over time.
Well, you didn't lay out too many obstacles, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Because the obstacles that they have overcome, each time they do it, there's more and more experience built up, and that's where I keep going back to the continuity. I don't think it's going to be a pure function of we have to go get this position.
Okay.
I think it's more a function of, like Chris mentioned, what are the opportunities that suddenly open up in free agency that weren't there, and how are we best going to spend our draft capital in relationship to our salary cap capital, because those two things work in conjunction with each other. And Bill does a really good job of looking at it globally and having those two things fused together.
Yeah, I think he's going to try to get some playmakers, either through free agency or the draft, that being on the offensive side. You talked about he's not going to spend the draft capital on a wide receiver, but they've done everything they could to try to get wide receivers in the door, even making the trade for Josh Gordon, who's no longer available to play, suspended currently. So look for on the defensive side, especially for their safeties. They got some veteran safeties that are getting a little bit older. Look for them to use some of those draft picks to bring in guys to be able to groom behind it. He needs playmakers. Brady needs playmakers. And you're not going to be able to, especially with Gronk. Gronk's not getting any faster. So I look for someone to be able to back him up or someone to take over that spot. But they need a wide receiver. Bang.
And we saw that they prioritized the idea of playmakers by trading for Philip Dorsett. They didn't get a big production out of him. He had the touchdown in the AFC Championship game at the end of the half. They went out and got Cordarrelle Patterson, like tried to find ways to get the ball in his hands. Guys like that maybe it would be less effort to actually get them, put them in position to make a play. They have shown by their own decisions, they do prioritize that. They just, over the last year and a half or so, haven't been able to find a guy that really hit for them in that capacity.
And they do prioritize it, but they're not going to chase it. They don't.
They're not going to reach in the draft.
There's been only a few times where you've looked at and you've been shocked at how much they spent to go get a free agent. And who is it? Adalius Thomas is the one where you go and you get that, and it hasn't really worked out. So it's more a function of where is that?
Stephon Gilmore surprised us with how much they spent, and it's paid off beautifully for them.
Yes.
Back here with Chris Mannix, we are going viral. The Lakers got blown out by 42 points to a Pacers team with no Victor Oladipo last night, and the Indiana faithful let Brandon Ingram know his time with LeBron in Los Angeles might be coming to a close. Chanting, LeBron's gonna trade you.
Yeah,
while he was at the free throw line.
They chanted this at a number of players while they're at the free throw line because it could apply to a whole host of players. Now, LeBron's not executing the trade, but that's...
Yeah, but he's not, because he has nothing to do with it, right?
What?
He has nothing to do with these guys being on the block, does he?
I think he has
the driving force trying to push him that way.
No. LeBron has a lot to do with the Lakers trying to acquire Anthony Davis. He has nothing to do with which Lakers are available. LeBron, I'm sure, would have preferred they traded Svi straight up for him.
I'm sure he's aware, though, of what it's going to take to get him.
Well, yeah, of course.
But, Mannix, I know you heard about the rumor about all around NBA arenas, they're yelling to Lakers when they're shooting free throws because they're one of the worst shooting free throw teams. They're yelling all kinds
of
stuff at them.
Let's just say this. That does not look like a team with players that want to be there.
Yeah. Just like the Cavs this time last year. I mean, that's what happened before the trade deadline.
But that was Cleveland, though. This is L.A.
This is L.A. Absolutely right. So, speaking of players that might not want to be where they are, let's talk about Kyrie Irving.
According to reports by a guy named Chris Mannix, Kyrie Irving is unhappy with their narrative that other superstars would impact his free agent decision. Whether Durant's going to the Knicks or AD's going to Boston. Remember, the Celtics were not on the list of teams that AD said he would sign with long term.
Yet.
Mannix, how tenuous is the situation for Boston right now?
I'm not sure what word applies here. I had an ex-teammate of Kyrie's call me after that New York press conference, and one thing he said was that Kyrie Irving hates having his name and his future associated with somebody else. In other words, he doesn't want to hear that Kevin Durant is going to bring Kyrie Irving to New York or that Anthony Davis is going to keep Kyrie Irving in Boston. Kyrie Irving, as is shown by his decision to force his way out of Cleveland, he has proven time and again that he's his own man and he's going to make his own decision. So that teammate thought that that was what sparked that reaction in New York. All that being said, while the Celtics have maintained a pretty good confidence that they're on the same page with Kyrie Irving, that they've treated this relationship as a partnership, they're not going to be certain of anything until Kyrie signs his name on that dotted line. That's why every time teams call for Terry Rozier, they're told, nope, not available. And teams have called about Terry Rozier.
So let me ask, so you and I talked last night, and you told me that the Celtics were not as devastated as a lot of people thought they would be with that press conference he did Friday, or the press avail, where he said, I don't know anyone bleep, where he said, ask me July 1st. But that therefore then means, if they weren't devastated by it, that while Celtics fans might have taken Kyrie's word as bond when he did the thing in TD Garden saying, I want my rafters hung up there, the Celtics took it the way I did, which was, this is not a sure thing. The Celtics have never viewed Kyrie staying as a sure thing. That's the only reason they wouldn't have been devastated by him wavering, correct?
Absolutely. If you go back to when Kyrie made that statement in front of the season ticket holders, the reaction by Boston's front office after that was very muted. It was like, well, we're glad to hear that. They never said, looking forward to five more years of Kyrie Irving. They know it's going to take a lot. But, Nick, they have kept Kyrie in the loop. They have treated him like the franchise player in Boston that he is by keeping him in the loop on everything that they're thinking about doing, including potentially acquiring Anthony Davis.
Well, why would he change his mind? If they're treating him like the superstar, and he came out and said, I'm going to do this, why would he have gone back on that and said the other things that he did?
It's been a frustrating season.
Yeah. Now, in talking to Kyrie's ex-teammate, did he give you the feeling he's going to stay there?
Didn't know.
And that's the constant theme with Kyrie Irving. They don't know if he's going to stay in Boston. And to me, it's going to have an effect on Anthony Davis. I don't know. You have a superstar who has been. I'm treating you the way that all superstars want to be treated. and I'm still not going to commit to you, and you think that AD, who doesn't even have you on the list, is now going to change his plan. I believe what's going on with Kyrie, just like what happened to IT, it affects these other players, and I believe it will affect Anthony Davis also.
And let me ask you another question. If the Celtics weren't, you know, shell-shocked by Kyrie's comments, how concerned were they by the trade the Knicks pulled off and the opening up two max salary spots in Kyrie's backyard?
I think that concerned them more than anything else that's happened over the last month, including the, you know, whatever Anthony Davis's representatives are saying, the Celtics aren't overly concerned by it because they feel like they've got a line into Anthony Davis and they feel like eventually he would commit down the road. The Knicks, though, the Celtics have always known that the lure of Kyrie Irving to New York is real. Some guys don't want to play at home. Kevin Durant doesn't want to play at home. We've heard Anthony Davis doesn't really want to play at home.
Yes.
Right? You know, LeBron James did want to play at home. Embrace that. It's the same for Kyrie Irving. Northern New Jersey raised. The attraction to the Knicks is real. So it was fine when the Knicks were the gang that can't shoot straight, when they were just
they had
the
all
stumbling,
those bad contracts.
The stumbling, bumbling franchise. Mm-hmm. But the Knicks with cap space, they're still kind of goofy. And like, maybe if they don't get the top overall pick, it might be a moot point. But the Knicks with the ability to get Kevin Durant, with the, maybe the ability to have the number one pick, that does concern Boston.
All right, so let's stay with the Boston Kyrie Anthony Davis angle for a moment. Let's say Kyrie leaves. If Kyrie leaves, do you think the Celtics would include Jason Tatum in a trade for Anthony Davis?
No.
Okay. So then I would ask you this. If Kyrie leaves, do you think the Celtics have legitimate assets to trump what the Lakers are offering now, absent of Jason Tatum in the deal?
Yes.
Okay. I thought you might say this. Can we just put up four blind heads right here? There's four players. You can see it better on that screen, Mannix, if you want to look at it. I'm just curious. There's their points, rebounds, assists this year, and they all shoot right around the same percentage from the field. Can you just give me off the top of your head what you rank those players left to right, one, two, three, four, if you would? Give me an idea. Is there one player that's clearly the best, one player that's clearly the worst?
No, because you want me to base this on numbers when one player is playing for a contender and three other players are playing for one that's not.
Okay, so you think there's only one player playing for a contender. That's interesting. Show me who those people are, if you would. Oh! So there's one. So I'm just curious, now that once we remove the allure of these guys, because I thought the guy on the last spot was pretty clearly statistically the worst. Mm. And he also shoots the lowest percentage, if that matters. I know I didn't have room for the percentages on there. And now I think Tatum's the best asset. I think his numbers are depressed, obviously, by the fact that Kyrie's there, all those things. Mm-hmm. But
I think he's depressed by that graphic.
Well, I'm just not at all, because the numbers also don't show the last month and a half for Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown went from being a 35-minute-per-game starter on a conference finals team to a guy that was shoved to the bench in, like, mid-November or late November. Mm-hmm. It takes an adjustment. You think that Jaylen Brown, if he was put in the Lakers, wouldn't be putting up the same type of numbers as Brandon Ingram and Kyle Kuzma?
No, I don't.
Oh, come on.
I don't think Jaylen Brown's a great offensive player.
I think he's a great offensive player, but I don't think Ingram or Kuzma are great offensive players either.
Okay, one more question on these great young Celtics. Aside from Tatum, who we all agree is a really valuable piece, but you said if Kyrie leaves, Tatum's not available. Who do you think is the best coach in basketball not named Greg Popovich? Is it not Brad Stevens? I feel like that's...
He's up there.
He's up there.
Five.
Okay, he's one of...
I believe he's... Eric Spoelstra put him up.
Okay, fine. But one of the best coaches.
Sure,
and one of the best at getting the most out of young players.
Has proven to be, yes.
What do you think Tatum and Brown, we would think of them, if they had been developing under Luke Walton? And what do you think we would think of either Kuzma or Ingram or Lonzo or any of them if they'd been developing under the young genius Brad Stevens, and how that affects what their value is? Because unless I'm wrong, Danny's not going to include Brad Stevens in the trade, right?
He is
Brad
not.
Stevens not available.
He did that once, you know, okay. Doc Rivers.
Right.
And the two previous examples, Julius Randle, he left, goes to the Pelicans. He's playing better ball. And D'Angelo Russell. In Brooklyn,
Leaves is playing is way better.
You're right, but like, okay, we're gonna really.
I'll just say this.
Let me put my basketball. I'll put my basketball. If I'm developing young players, I would much rather them be developing in Boston than I would in L.A. You don't have to say that.
Right.
So the young players in L.A., if they had been with Brad Stevens, we all would think they would be better.
Right. We got more confidence in Brad as a coach.
I think they would be better. The flip side of that argument is that they got significantly more opportunity, minutes, shots, playing in Los Angeles, which increased their numbers.
What about the young kids in Boston? Those minutes they got in the playoffs with those guys being injured?
Oh, yeah. If you want to
You don't think that boosted them? Because we wouldn't have known.
The last 2 months of the year, basically March when Kyrie went out and those guys all started to get 30-plus minutes, that's a good sample size for that. But that graphic, come on.
Well, I don't create the numbers.
Can we get Jaylen Brown's last month and a half numbers?
Okay, but he's not. But the season's not just a month and a half. One for one. Jaylen Brown, Brandon Ingram. Who's the more valuable piece?
I would take Brandon Ingram, but I think it's close.
Okay, one for one. Lonzo Ball, Jaylen Brown.
Jaylen Brown.
Kyle Kuzma, Jaylen Brown.
Jaylen Brown.
Okay. All right. Defensive player of the year coming. Must be, because he's not a very good offensive player.
He's been a lot better offensively.
Because he was averaging 7 points a game, man. Like, of course he's going to be better. He was terrible.
He was not averaging 7 points a game.
Okay,
his three-point shooting in January was 44-45%, something like that. Mm-hmm. He's been a lot better. Is he not the player you saw in the playoffs? Like, what was the player you saw in the playoffs?
I don't know. My last memory was him going 0 for game 7, okay. and they lost. It was my last memory.
First game 7 against Mannix. LeBron. Uh-huh.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.